Third hour, Darren, Donick, and Chase here on this Tuesday afternoon, ESPN 102.5 The Game. We always love catching up with former Titan safety Michael Griffin, and he is on the line with us. Michael, how you doing?
I'm doing good. How about yourself?
Oh, good. It's always good to talk to you. You and the family safe these days?
Yeah. You know, I'm the one that has to go out in the war zone, go grocery shopping and those type of things. So the wife and the kids get to sit at home peacefully. I finally get to tell her that I'm the wife of the family now, and she cannot tell me that I don't do anything at all. So, roles are reversed now in the house.
You took the words out of my mouth. It looks like the roles have reversed.
Roles are reversed, yes. Initially, it was she held down the fortress and I was out. Now it's, you know, I got to go out and buy the groceries. And it's amazing how it's kind of complicated because sometimes you go through the whole pantry and you want to buy what you want to eat, but then you got to make sure you know where everybody else eats. And sometimes I buy a little too much just because I get a little finger happy of just grabbing things. Like, I look like I might eat this, I might eat this, I might eat that. So it's my bills are a lot larger than hers when we come home on what we spent at the grocery store.
Oh, that's funny. What did you make of you played with Jarrell Casey? You understand what it's like to go through what he, and you know, he put his heart and soul into his time here, a third round pick that you know, made it, and not only made it but got the big payday as well and was rewarded for his play on the field. And then he does a podcast with the McCourty twins, and of course Jason, who was a teammate of both of you guys. You know, he said he kind of, you know, paraphrase or really his words, where he felt like, you know, the trash. He got put out with the trash and just didn't like the way it ended. How do you balance that as a player where you know it's business, but you know it's also personal?
It's hard because, I mean, I've dealt with it. You know, I played with Tennessee for 9 years, and it was trying to – you know, that last year I think might have been the toughest year for me because mentally you're trying to convince yourself that, you know, I was a Viking or I was a Carolina Panther. And deep down inside of you, you know, you felt like you did everything you possibly could to make an organization and the coaches and them proud of you and feel like that, you know, they probably could have, you know, maybe offered you a, you know, a pay cut or ask you to prove yourself or whatever it may have been, you know, through training camp or whatever. But again, I mean, it's hard. It is hard. I've been there. It puts you in a deep place. You know, on the outside eyes, like, hey, you're blessed. You get opportunity. You're still playing. You're still making the money and everything else. But again, when you're in that locker room with your friends, your family, and you really trust the coaches and everything else, I mean, it's hard to say, yes, it is a business. But at the same time, you know, your coaches – is your coaches, and you trust them, and then you have conversations with them and the general manager, and you high five, you dap each other up 24/7, and then next thing you know, you're traded. I'm telling you, it's almost like you feel like you've been cheating on in a marriage or something. It's tough. It's a tough situation. But at the same time, it's a business. And you just hope and pray that, you know, that he can, you know, get over that emotional state, because you don't want to keep playing with that, because it's hard to go out there each and every day, especially to play for another team and you really feel like that you're a Titan, but now you're trying to do everything you can for this team. And it's a tough place. It's a tough place unless you've actually been there before. I'm sure Jason McCourty been through it also. You know, he went to the Cleveland Browns, and then he got traded over. And I remember talking to him. He was in a tough place or whatever. And now he's happy as ever being able to play with his brother, win a Super Bowl. Who wouldn't be? But I know there was a point in time where he was feeling some type of way about the whole situation also.
Is there any good way to do it? I mean, to me, it's like a relationship breaking up. There's like no good time. There's no good way to do it. I guess the bad way to do it would be via text, in my opinion, or email, or you know, someone being let go at work. Like it's never. So how do you go about? Because I know I understand his side, like I understand a player's side, the side you were on, but I also understand the business side. It's like There's no easy way to do it, right?
I don't think there is an easy way to do it. Because either way, is one side is going to be more hurt than the other. I remember like yesterday, right after the Super Bowl in San Francisco, I forgot who was playing. I think it was Carolina Panthers versus the Denver Broncos. And I remember the day after the Super Bowl, I just got back. It was snowing and everything. I remember I got a phone call from Coach Malarkey at the time, and he asked me, could I come in? And I remember, you know, I called one of the other coaches and asked what was going on, and he said, hey, they just came in the office, and John Robinson is going to release you. And I was like, okay. Okay. So I remember coming in and kept my car running and went and told Matt, to be exact, and Hoss, hey, can y'all pack my locker up and just throw it in my car? They're like, what are you talking about? I was like, I'm being released. They're like, what are you talking about? I'm like, I'm being released. Just throw my stuff in the car, you know, because I've been there. I've seen it. I heard everything. You know, I heard, they said they're going to bring me back. They said because it, I heard everything. I understand. You try to smooth things out. And I remember going in the office, and I remember John Robinson talking to me, and I told him, all due respect, John Robinson, I respect you. I'm sure you respect me. There's nothing really you could tell me that's going to make this situation feel any better. You don't know me, and I don't know you. I know you're doing a job, and I respect that. You're asked to run a multi-billion-dollar organization. I respect that. But if you just tell me a whole bunch of BS, I'm going to lose all respect for you. So out of respect for me, if you're releasing me, all right, tell me what I need to sign, what I need to go do, and we'll keep it moving, because – there's really nothing that you could actually tell me to make me feel better, and there's nothing really I could tell you or whatever that's going to make this be any more better than what it is, what it is. So I laugh every time I tell him. When I see him, I say, you probably did the best job. You released me and you found Kevin Byard. Like, it worked out great.
So what did he say, Michael, when you said that to him? Because I'm dying to hear his response after you said that.
His response was, I respect that. Can you go see Coach Dick LeBeau? He said he wanted to speak with you before you leave. It was nothing really to be said. I'm firing you. What are we going to talk about?
Right,
nothing
right.
really to talk about. Like, you want a pat on the back? Do you want me to give you a get well soon cupcake or something? I mean, I don't know. It's nothing really to be said. And then it was funny because I remember walking out, and then you got those two guys, I call them the Green Reapers, that are like following you, but they're interns. And he's like, hey, I need you to give me your playbook. I'm like, dude, we went like 3-13. You think we got a playbook in February? Like, we gave our playbooks in on the last day. Like, do y'all even know how to do your job? I think I could do your job a lot better than you can. So I remember just hanging out and talking to Jason McCourty because he had an injury that year, and we're hanging out in the training room, and they're like, Griff, what are you doing? I'm like, oh, I don't work for y'all no more, but I'm just going to hang out for a little bit longer, talk to all y'all before I get up out of here. And got out of there, and it's funny because now every time I show up, it's like you got to go through that whole protocol that everybody else got to go through. Like, hey, put your finger on the little thing and then put the little name tag on your chest, and it's like, you know, it's a real business. So – I mean, now 4 years later, hey, great, cool. But at the time, it's definitely an emotional roller coaster that you got to somewhat figure out how to get over. Especially with Jarrell Casey, he got a lot left in the tank. You know, I was on the tail end of my career, and you know, it is what it is. I'm able to admit that you know, age caught up with me and everything else. So I'm cool. I'm happy where I'm at today. I'm pleased. I was blessed. I thank the Adams family for giving me the opportunity to be in where I'm at right now. And, again, I have no hard feelings. At the time, yes, you're upset. But, again, I mean, the first game of the season is Denver Broncos versus the Tennessee Titans. So I don't know what to tell you. If Casey wants to get some gift back, he definitely has a great opportunity to show that they might have messed up. I don't know.
Yeah. By the way, good job by you working cupcakes into the John Robinson story. Well played.
Oh, thank you. Appreciate it. GG's. If anybody know which one, GG's. You got to always market yourself, especially right now with COVID-19 or whatever. We do online orders, and we do Grubhubs and things of that nature. So, yes, it works out tremendously for people.
Well done. Willie?
Well done. Michael Griffin is with us, two-time Pro Bowler, 10-year veteran for the Titans, of course, former University of Texas great, and he's now doing some work as well with the Longhorn Network. And, you know, Michael, it's interesting. We've had so many of the classic games in front of us. If you want to watch a game, it's a classic game. So the good news is it's a great game. If you're going to sit down and watch it, it's worth watching again. The bad news is, of course, we know who wins and all that. We want competition that's fresh as soon as we can. But we had a guest on named Richard Justice, a baseball writer, a few weeks ago. He said he had watched the Texas-USC game multiple times during this. Richard Justice, not David Justice.
Oh, okay. I'm about to say yeah. David Justice from the Atlanta Braves. I was a big fan.
Oh, that would have been great. Yeah, if you have David's number, we'd love to have him on the show as well. But Richard Justice.
Too. Okay, Richard Justice. I'm sorry, Richard. I'm sorry. Jump the gun.
But I think he's a Texas fan. That's what I got the signal that what he was saying. But nonetheless, you know, you have the distinction of playing in one of the greatest college football games of all time. I mean, anytime they're showing classic games, that is going to be heavily rotated. As you get more removed from that game, what are your thoughts? Like, when that comes on again, do you watch it? Do you want to watch it? How many times have you watched it since you actually played in it?
I actually watched it the very first time since I played in it. During this whole COVID-19, at Longhorn Network, I took over for the Twitter. And watched it and was able to tweet things out or whatever, and it was the first time I actually watched it. And I will say, it was the first time I ever watched Vince Young play. And reason being is I always been on the same team as him. And when he was out there on the field, I was always on the sideline going over adjustments and things of that nature. So this time I actually got to watch him play, and I was really, 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 really impressed. Like, I see why the talk of him being probably the greatest one of the greatest college football players ever, but let alone quarterbacks ever to play the game, because it was impressive. Like, just watching him play was impressive, especially versus that USC defense. I mean, they had Brian Cushing, Keith Rivers, Ray Maluga, a lot of guys, Darnell Bean. I mean, the list just goes on when you think about that team. So it was very impressive just to watch what he did versus that USC defense, and on the defensive side for us, I mean, it was just great rewatching this. It was a lot of jokes. Me, Michael Huff, Brian Arakpo, Jamal Charles. We laughed about a lot of jokes. Jamal actually like fumbled. I think he either fumbled the ball, or almost fumbled the ball, but they called an incomplete pass. We laughed about that. Laughed at Brian Arakpo. Michael Huff told him, like, "Did you even play? Oh, I see you got one tackle for the whole game." It's just a lot of stuff that we just joked internally about ourselves. Then we laughed because Lindell White stiffed on Michael Huff, and then Reggie Bush scored his touchdown and got me. I realized how fast he really was when he got around the outside. Just things like that. We just went back and rewatched it. But it was really a great, great game. We kind of got upset at our field goal kicker because he kind of put us in a tough situation because he missed the field goal and missed the extra point. We probably wouldn't have been in such emotional at the time because we didn't know if we were going to win or not when we realized that we missed those key kicks. But, again, it was a great game.
So some unbelievable talent, as you kind of documented, that was in that game. How often you became teammates, of course, with Lindell White? I mean, there were some guys on your team that ended up being on the Titans. Lindell White was, Norm Chow was there for a while as well. How much did you guys end up talking about that game in a Titans locker room?
Oh, you know Lindell. You know Lindell. You know Lindell's going to let you know. He's going to let you know he had three touchdowns. They don't know why they didn't give him the ball more. We couldn't stop him. He just kept going on and on and on. So, yeah, Lindell let it be known. I keep telling Lindell, "You want to see my ring? It got a number one on it, and it has the score with me versus you." So, but it was a great game because, again, everybody was watching. It was January 4th, to be exact, 2005. It's actually my 21st birthday, so it was my birthday that day. So,
wow,
that's a great way to celebrate it. And it was just all around. I mean, it was just a lot of talent that was out there. Two Heisman Trophy winners, two Thorpe Award winners were out there. If you go back to the Nagurski Award and things of those nature that Brian Arakpo won later on, a running back who's the all-time yards per carry, as in Jamal Charles at 5.4. So there's a lot of talent that was out there. Maybe wasn't that talent that giving day or that year, but went to go on to become great, great football players. You know, with Khalil playing forever at the center position for the Carolina Panthers. It was a lot of talent out there, a lot of talent. And a lot of those guys out there went on to NFL and became staples of their teams. So it just lets you know how much talent that was really out there on that given day.
Was there any moment that you forgot, that you had forgotten, until you watched it back, whether it involved a play maybe you were in or just something that happened in the game? I totally forgot that that happened.
There's not. I mean, I kind of remember it vividly, like literally vividly. I remember the game. I mean, not necessarily on the offensive side, but on the defense, I pretty much remembered everything vividly. I would say this: the first punt, we stopped them in three. The first was open the game up. I forgot that Aaron Ross fumbled the opening punt return. He fumbled it, and they got the ball back. I forgot all about that play. And again, he went on the very next year to win the Thorpe Award. So that just tells you what type of talent of player he was. And he also won two Super Bowl rings, and not to mention that his wife won as a four-time Olympian gold medalist. So, I forgot all about that play in the opening. I mean, it could have got ugly very quickly, but we had managed to hold him to 3 points.
Wow. It's amazing how some people can remember so many details, and others it's just a blur, even though they had a big part in the game. Michael Griffin is with us, the former Titan. So, Michael, I've always enjoyed getting your perspective on all these issues, which is why we're having you on today. So in the wake of all that's happened here and the social consciousness, the mode we're all in right now, turning all of this energy into some positive changes going forward, let's say you're on a committee of players and you're talking about how to channel this in the best possible way. What are some of the thoughts that go through your mind that they should be talking about?
For me, you have to be open for conversation and communication. And when I say listen, it's not listen to respond, but listen to comprehend. And you got to stop the finger pointing. The more you see on social media and everything else, if somebody doesn't agree with you, you label them. Whether they're you label them, and the word racist is used so loosely, because of this matter. At this point of matter, it's almost like as the black community, we're trying to find a way to use racist, and then as the white community, we're trying to prove that we're not racist, but we're trying so hard as the white community to prove that we're not racist that sometimes we just say the wrong things and it's interpreted a certain way, because if you tweet something and you text something or whatever, you don't know the emotions behind it. So you can interpret it however you're feeling that type of way. So I really think in order to bring change, it has to be communication and conversations. From both sides, a lot of things and experiences in life is why you perceive and why it molds you. You know, as a kid, you know, I have a 3-year-old, I have a 10-year-old as of yesterday, and then I have a 12-year-old. The things that they go through today molds them to who they're going to become as adults. And it's the same thing with if you're raising, you know, a puppy. You know, the more exposure and the more that you get, you know, the puppy out and about, the least timid it will be, the more it'll know how to react in certain situations. So I think that's where we're at right now, is we just got to be open to conversations and be willing to listen and be able to embrace one another, love one another, to continue. And what happened in the past, as in history, that is history. And that's something that we're always going to take with us, whether we eliminate statues or whatever it may be, it's something that's going to still be in the history books and things that we're going to continue to talk about over the course of time. But again, I think the biggest thing is conversation. I live in a predominantly, I like to say, white class neighborhood. And, you know, there was conversations going on. I told people I'm very willing to have an open conversation, to talk. you know, I can hear your side, you can hear my side, and we can have our views and we can agree to disagree. But at the same time, if you respect one another, we can get a long way. If you disrespect one another, we can't get anywhere. So I think that's just where it comes down to, is being able to have to be cordial enough to respect one another. Understand that words do hurt and they can be perceived in so many different ways. So if I label you a racist, it may make you feel a certain type of way. The same way if you call me, you know, the N-word or anything else that may be derogatory to myself, or if you call a young woman the B-word. So at the same time, we just got to be respectful to one another and stop using the word so loosely, but have conversations. Because if we don't have conversations, we're not going to get anywhere. We're just going to continue to point the finger and be divided and segregated within.
Well, we always enjoy our conversations with you, and we certainly appreciate you jumping on with us as always. Would love to continue this conversation down the road because it needs to be had, and certainly your perspective we appreciate and respect, and maybe we can do that here sooner rather than later. Thanks for doing this as always.
Hey, appreciate y'all as always. I hope y'all taking care of yourselves, family, and everybody's safe, and hopefully we have a football season we can catch up soon.
Fingers crossed. The same to you and your family. Thank you, Griff.
Thank y'all. Y'all take care. Thank y'all. God bless you.
Former Titan safety Michael Griffin joining us here on Darren, Donick, and Chase. We'll come back with more here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.